Hi, I'm Jerry Davich. Today on Off Mic, we'll take a look at the broader picture behind the "We're Hiring" signs at local businesses with insights from an economics professor at IUN about the ongoing Great Assessment of Work, as it's called. We'll also hear from a Gary pastor who says he went through hell after contracting COVID-19, the worst 17 days of his life, he says, and how he now feels compelled to spread the gospel about vaccinations for the deadly virus. And we'll get introduced to the Fighting Minds campaign with one man's journey of self-awareness about mental health and exercise. If time allows, we'll also touch on the issue of mask mandates versus recommendations and the upcoming 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on September 11th, 2001. All this and more when we return with this week's Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Jerry Davich, columnist for the Post Tribune and Chicago Tribune Media, in for Michael Puente. Thanks for the offer. On today's show, we'll take a look at the broader picture behind all the "We're Hiring" signs at local businesses with insights from Micah Pollack, an economics professor at IUN, about the ongoing Great Assessment of Work, as it's called. I see "We're Hiring" signs everywhere, and I've taken photos of it for a new column for Labor Day. We'll also hear from a Gary pastor who says he went through hell after contracting COVID-19. He called it the worst 17 days of his life, and how he now feels compelled to spread the gospel about vaccinations for the deadly virus. He had an event last Sunday, and I called it disappointing. He called it inspiring. We're going to talk about it on today's show. And we'll touch on the issue of mask mandates versus mask recommendations, and also the upcoming 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks on September 11th, 2001. If you were an adult, maybe a kid, and that day happened, you remember it, right? Remember where you were, what you were doing, how you feel? There's a new show out about it, and I still feel the same exact way 20 years later. I think that's incredible. But first, we're going to introduce the Fighting Minds campaign with one man's journey of self-awareness about mental health and exercise. Martin Alexi is owner and creative director of Skyflower Ad Agency. He's in the Lakeshore studio with us to share his personal insights about a topic that's been in the news more than ever in my career, and especially lately with the Olympics and all across the country. And I'm just glad we're talking about this issue. Martin, welcome to Lakeshore. Welcome to Off Mic.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Welcome back to the radio. Welcome back to Lakeshore. This is kind of nice. This is nice reunion of sorts.
Muscle memory for me. Just driving here was the same, and sitting in the seat was the same. Martin's mentioning my Casual Fridays radio show that I had with Karen Walker for, like, what, 5 or 6 years or so?
Right.
So it's the same studio, same microphone. I'm even in the same seat. It all kind of comes back to us.
And you had that perfect intro. Nothing. You haven't skipped a beat.
I haven't skipped a beat.
I'm a little rusty.
We're all a little rusty. This pandemic and COVID-19 has made us all a little skittish.
Thank you for the excuses.
And rusty. It's the truth. And it's also reminded us mental health is not a given as it used to be. And you don't have to toughen up kind of thing. And you could explore these issues and you could admit something. I mean, I was going to write a column a couple months ago on taking that mental off day.
All right.
If I was told that when I was a kid or younger in my career, people would have laughed at me.
Right.
You want a day for mental health? You know, that just would be mocked. Now it's not, correct? Now
correct.
It's more
when
than
I, when I was growing up, I had a similar experience where my mom and my aunts would get together for their mental health day. And that was kind of the—
Did they call it that?
Yes. And that was the reputation, though, that it had. Mental health day was a group effort, tended to be gender specific, and it was about, you know, maybe going to the theater, enjoying wine, but it wasn't, you know, a night out with the guys was never really called a mental health.
Was it stigmatized back then?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Flat out, yeah. I would say so, too.
I'd say, you know, it's still stigmatized. It's very difficult as I try to write this campaign, this Fighting Mind campaign. It's difficult to have the correct language because I personally do not want to be overly flowery. You know, because I know sometimes that doesn't attract certain people.
Flowery in what way?
Flowery as in maybe words such as self-care, self-love.
Oh.
You know, that may not reach with a lot of people, especially very independent-minded people. And I don't think it matters as to gender. I think it matters as to outlook on life. And
is it generational, Martin? It sounds like old school generational. They're going to have some pushback on this.
It could be. But I would say I even have a little pushback on that. Because
you're just old enough to be old enough to have the pushback and young enough to introduce it. Right?
Maybe.
To welcome it.
And I've seen some of the other campaigns that approach the subject of exercise and depression and anxiety. And I realized that some of them are overcompensating. The language is, let's kill this. Let's crush this. Let's destroy it. And you're
crush what? You mean the depression, the anxiety?
Exactly.
Oh, I see, the mental health. I see. Okay.
And it's, which I understand that as well.
Yeah.
To me, whatever voice works for you, works for you. And as long
kill
as you
kill it, that's right. The voice you're talking about, yeah. From the older generation.
If you have voices in your head saying kill, no, but if you have those voices, if you have that language and it works for you, that's fine. I think it tends to alienate people. I want to be as inclusive as possible. When I started writing this, I started writing it in a campaign of brand voices and different voices. And then a good friend of mine said, what you need to do is write it in your voice. And then see who you can reach out to, who you can connect with. So I did that. And the first line that I had for this campaign was exercising your demons or exercising demons. And I really like that.
Is that the wordplay? We talked earlier off air that wordplay can get in the way of a message. Was that wordplay getting in the way of your message, you think?
I was afraid that was going to alienate somebody.
I see.
Maybe somebody wouldn't touch it. Because, there's a religious aspect where they don't even want to play with that, which I understand.
Right, right.
So I came up with fighting minds because I think that's what a lot of people go through. And to kind of give a description of this campaign, I realized that for most of my adult life, I would exercise and work out, but I wasn't taking care of myself. And what I mean by that is that when I was younger, I just would hit the bike path in Chicago and run and just go crazy just to burn off some either energy, youthful energy, but a lot of it was rage. A lot of it was anger towards myself. And I didn't realize it. But what you become is a liability.
But there's a thin line I've learned between having that chip on your shoulder to propel you and motivate you, which I think I have as well, versus a demon or a mental health problem or anxiety. And for you to reconcile those two. Are you able to do that? Has that been the struggle for you?
Well, it's taken me most of my adult life, but I'm finally there. Because when I came back, say, 10 years ago to Indiana, I started working out and working out. And then I realized the frustration was still there because all I did was work out to exhaust myself. And that gave me an excuse to not get the work done that I needed to get done.
I see.
And that was the struggle. And that was the depression would get worse. And then I'd work out more until I was exhausted, and then you kind of give yourself an excuse. Well, now, since 2017, I had a concussion, and what I got out of that was I had an excellent neurologist that treated me for 8 months, and as a neurologist, he made an excellent psychiatrist. And the more I learned about it, the more I realized what I was doing. And if you become self-aware, a term I will use.
Yeah, right.
That's a gift. And if you can be self-aware as to why you're out there, why are you running? Why are you swimming? Why are you rowing? Why are you going to exhaustion? Are you doing it to vent? Are you doing it to balance things? Are you doing it for the endorphins? Are you doing it because you know if you go home, you may say the wrong thing?
Right.
It's a lot of that you kind of discover about yourself. So that's when I started writing some of these thoughts. It was my pandemic experiment.
So before you explain this to listeners, this campaign, it's new, right? It's very new.
Right.
It's new in your head as well as new in the world. I'm curious how often you've opened up about any depression or anxiety issues ever. I mean, is this relatively new in your life? Do you do it casually? Do you feel comfortable? Is it totally stigmatized in your own head and you don't want to address it at all?
It used to be stigmatized. It used to be...
What turned for you? What changed things in your head where you could
concussion.
Feel... comfortable, really.
The concussion. And it wasn't a physical reaction necessarily, other than when you have a concussion and you have depression and anxiety, it will heighten those to senses I had never experienced.
I see.
You know, those far-reaching experiences people say about you wake up and you're like, damn, I'm awake.
Because this subject, Martin, that you're addressing and you're revealing and sharing with us, and thank you for doing that, because I've written for 25 years columns about depression and anxiety. There are certain issues we just don't talk about. Suicide, mental health, depression, anxiety, gender, sexuality. There's certain things we just don't, you only do it in whispers. You do it if you know someone. So to do it publicly, to do it openly, I applaud you for that.
Well, thank you. And I know It's a trendy topic, especially with the Olympics, as you were saying.
Yeah.
But each case is individualistic. And this campaign, I wrote from my own voice, but I'm trying to reach out to anybody else that can relate to it to kind of say, this is kind of a judgment-free zone. If you're out here already, if you get home from work, if you change and you get out on that track, that's huge. Okay, so you've already won. So to me, you deserve a victory lap. The first lap is your victory lap.
Hey, can we just pivot for 1 second? So at the start of the conversation, you were talking about the names, kind of the names you were playing with for this particular campaign. And you said the name Fighting Demons, and I'm over here working the boards, and then I looked up. For the exact reason that Jerry said, you know, when you hear, or maybe you said it, when people of faith, when they hear that name, they're like, oh my goodness, what does that even mean? This conversation for me that we're having right now is so relevant because I was at church last night where we know that the conversation around mental health within the church is very stigmatized. We do not discuss it at all. And we had, my husband and myself had a very serious conversation with one of our great friends, and I won't reveal what the conversation was about, but it was about, I won't go into details, but there's an issue of mental health within the family. The family kind of just, I guess, not necessarily addressing that issue, and it led to some serious consequences for a family member. And it was just amazing that we were kind of able to talk about it at church, but we were in like a quiet room. So we weren't able, I guess we still weren't comfortable talking about it, or that friend wasn't comfortable enough to talk about it amongst the other, we say, saints within the church, because he was still embarrassed. And it's a pretty serious issue. It led to an attempted suicide, I will just say that. Thank goodness the family member survived. But I just think about, just like you guys are saying, why is it so stigmatized, especially within the church, even within the community, to even talk about this issue? I think that not talking about mental health issues leads to more people kind of hiding, not being comfortable enough to share, and not seeking help. So I'm thankful that you're having this conversation. It's just like, this is 24 hours later, and this is really hitting home for me.
And it's probably fresh in the minds of a lot of people. We've all had these encounters with people.
Absolutely.
And I should have introduced Dee Dotson earlier, who's running the board for us and producing the show. Thank you, Dee, for piping in. But I agree completely that these are conversations you typically have in small gatherings,
yes,
at best, people you know maybe intimately, and that's about it. To do it publicly, to have this kind of dialogue, that's why I wanted Martin on the show. That's why I wanted to talk about this issue. And tell us more about Fighting Minds, please.
Well, Fighting Minds then became a pandemic exercise for me, where obviously social distancing meant that hitting the track, and a high school track, a local track, by myself mostly, was perfect. So I became the subject and the photographer. And I would try to just take photos and see what would come to mind. And every time for years, I would run the track or I would do exercise, and my mind would just open up. And I would think, why can't I do this when I'm not working out? Why can't my brain get as enthusiastic or as confident in my thoughts or
right,
campaigns? And then I started recording myself. I'd just record thoughts right after. Or I'd stop and I'd record it. And then that became this series of little...
So it started on social media? Because I've seen a lot of your photos capturing what you've been doing.
Right. I just released it this week. And I thought, well, I'm going to just put it out there. Because
right,
my goal was Labor Day. I just, you know, my internal goal
right,
was to get this done by Labor Day. So now the fact that it's out, and it still took a lot for me to hit that send button. Like you said, it's a little hard to share sometimes.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
But
of course it is.
At the same time, I think I've gotten to that point where I'm like, it is what it is. And my experience is my experience.
And you get reach a certain age, Martin, I'm guessing. I know I have. And you go, well, forget this. I'm just going to reveal whatever, and I'm going to share things. That's what I kind of
right,
do for a
and
living.
And if I could help somebody to,
exactly,
to not waste most of their adult life the way I did, misguided.
Do you feel it? Do you feel that? The word waste is a huge word,
yes,
to use.
Oh, yeah,
with your
absolutely,
own life.
It's cost me, you know, basically, to oversimplify it, let's call it overthinking things.
Okay.
Overreacting to things.
Paralyzing yourself through self-doubt and self-thinking.
Right. Or lack of action.
Oh, I see.
And then that's what came from this. So that's why I'm looking to, I just want to release it. I'm hoping to connect with people. And if it helps somebody, I think that'd be pretty wonderful.
Give me an example of one of the takeaways from Fighting Minds or this campaign. Somebody's listening to us. Somebody's going to read it on social media. They're going to go, oh, I have a similar problem, or my mom does, or my son does. How can they tap into this? How can they help themselves or help their loved one by at least recognizing this and maybe even talking about it or broaching it? That's the huge, huge aspect.
It helps you in a way of exercise is not going to do you damage, you know, as long as you're safe about it. Let's say that. But if you add exercise to your life, or you enhance it to maybe be a third of what would help you get through, you know, maybe you say, okay, I'm going to exercise, but I'm going to find somebody to talk to. And I'm going to talk to my doctor. And between the patient and the doctor, they can decide if meds are necessary or not. But you have a balance. I hadn't had a balance for years.
I see.
And now there's a balance.
Were you like a pendulum going from left to right, from back and forth?
I was a ranger going from rage to anger.
Oh, and, I see.
Or quiet.
I see.
Or hilarious, you know, where you put on a show, a comedy show, just so.
Oh, I did that most of my life, yeah. Yeah, half of my front is that. I totally understand. We all erect this kind of, we manufacture a facade, our public facade versus our private one. And for you to reconcile these two and to talk about it on air, that's why I wanted to have you on the show. And that's why I want you to, I want hopefully listeners would hear this, tap into it, understand it. And then they could look, how can they find more information, for instance, on the campaign? How can they at least find out who you are, how to get a hold of you?
Right now it's just on Facebook or it's on Facebook, LinkedIn. And it's an IG campaign. If you want, it's flying at Flying Mind Creative on IG. It's under Skyflower LLC on Facebook. It's
okay.
Under my name on Facebook and LinkedIn as well.
And listeners, viewers, readers would find some bullet points to tap into to help them start this conversation, or this a journey. You called it a journey of self-awareness. They could have this own journey of self-awareness, and they could do it earlier than you're hoping in life.
Yes. I left it open to where they can see the campaign and read it for themselves, and I would appreciate feedback because I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm giving you my experience, and
right.
I'm trying to let you know that there's a lot of pride you can take away from just getting out. Getting up and getting out. You know, one of the things I wrote about calling exercising demons, as I said, in the Hollywood movies, they always say the demons say, get out. Well, not really. And if you think about it, the demon wants you to stay in your head, on the couch, in your house. The best thing you could do to exercise your demons is to get out.
Yeah.
So that's just, that's one of the thoughts.
And too many people
processes.
Don't get out.
It's so powerful. No,
they don't get out of their head. They don't get out of their house. They don't get out of their torment.
And that's where the stigma can come in, because sometimes if people kind of wallow in that, people can say, look, they'll walk away. You know, if you don't want to help yourself, but you have to want to help yourself.
Yeah. And I'm hoping somebody who's listening to this, to the show today, or listens to it later on the podcast,
right.
or watches the social media campaign, can try to find themselves, right? And start that journey.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Absolutely. Martin, I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the...
We could circle back to it too later on the show, because I have a couple more questions, but we're going to take a quick break here.
Okay.
You're listening to Off Mic. Jerry Davich, Martin Alexi is with us, and Dee Dotson's running the board. When we return, we'll take a look at the broader picture behind all the We're Hiring signs at local businesses, with insights from Micah Pollack, an economics professor at IUN, about the ongoing Great Assessment of Work. It's everywhere. We hope you stay with us. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Jerry Davich with Dee Dotson and Martin Alexi. Next up, we're going to take a look at the broader picture behind all these We're Hiring signs at all the local businesses. You see them everywhere, every community. We've invited an economics professor from IUN, Micah Pollack, to talk about the Great Assessment of Work. It seems the pandemic has woken up millions of American workers who are mindlessly kind of plodding along until they experience this Great Assessment of Work, especially in our region with a relatively higher proportion of workers and lower paying service sector jobs. So for more insights, Micah, welcome to Off Mic.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
We appreciate your time, and as usual, I always appreciate your expertise. When I have a question about health data, economics, anything else, you're always my number one person to go to, and if you're not following Micah on his Twitter account, you should be. He educates me every day, and you're going to educate me and hopefully some Lakeshore listeners today about this topic. Micah, the quick question is this. I live in Valparaiso. I drive around the region, and all I see is signs on local businesses, whether it's restaurants, eateries, stores, whatever. We're hiring. We have bonuses. Please work for us. It's $12 an hour. It's $15 an hour. We need you. We have staffing shortages. It's everywhere, and I've taken photos, and I'm writing about this for my Labor Day column coming up here on Monday, and then I reached out to you for more information to see if my office base, but is this some kind of a historic seismic shift of some kind?
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. It really is. I mean, the pandemic caused workers to kind of pause for a minute and reassess their situation. And, you know, for many, when they kind of did the math, they found out that what they were getting out of their job was a lot less than maybe they thought. You know, so some realized that they were spending all day working only to just make enough to cover their child care while they were at work, or others found that the, you know, long hours or stress from a toxic work environment really weren't worth what they were being paid and how they were being compensated.
And I'm wondering, these people who have pushed this reset button in their life, did they do it intentionally? Were they waiting for this moment to happen, or were they kind of blindsided and now they're still reeling from it?
I think it was a little bit of a surprise. I don't think it was deliberate at first. Like you said, people were kind of plodding along. You know, you don't think about your situation as a whole. You just kind of, you know, go to your job, you get your paycheck, you know, take the kids to daycare. And this really forced everyone to kind of stop for a minute. And when you stop and pause and think about it, then you start to question, okay, is what I'm doing the right choice or not?
And when they make this right choice, they've been labeled and criticized for it. A lot of people are being called lazy. They're taking government money. They haven't gone back to work. They haven't filled the job ranks. They're getting a lot of critical backlash from it. I mean, is this justified or is it unfair?
Oh, I think it's unfair. I mean, you don't have unemployment insurance numbers that are any higher than we did pre-pandemic. I mean, there's not any more people on unemployment insurance now than there was before the pandemic. What's happening is that we're seeing workers shift from one type of job to another. You know, while this was happening, there was this big expansion of what we call the gig economy jobs, you know, like delivering food or groceries. There's a huge increase in demand for those kind of jobs during the pandemic. And while a lot of these jobs pay less, they often have, you know, non-monetary benefits that have become way more important to workers, you know, things like having a flexible schedule and being able to work around your family needs, or, you know, simply a safe work environment and the ability to control your level of risk of exposure during the pandemic. I mean, if you're concerned about the virus, then dropping groceries off on someone's doorstep is going to be a lot more attractive as a job than, say, working in a crowded restaurant with no masks. And while a lot of these jobs maybe have little to no health care or sick leave or retirement benefits, often neither did the jobs that the workers are leaving behind.
Hi, this is Martin. I was just listening to the point that you were making, and I think maybe it's more of a comment more than a question, but you do, as Jerry said, you see a lot of signs that say, we're hiring. But I have seen a lot, mostly on social media, signs that say, nobody wants to work anymore. And what I think, to me, that just doesn't help things. And I see people respond with, well, let me fix that for you. People don't want to work for peanuts anymore. Or maybe people are working, you know, what's I'm very familiar with, the working poor class, you know, where you have two jobs or you have a full-time job and you have that 90-day wait for health insurance, or you have no health insurance options. So you're working and working and you're just hoping that the bottom doesn't drop out where somebody needs to go to the hospital, or you go to the pharmacy. And you know, I've been there where you go to the pharmacy and your medicine is you have a sticker shock.
Right.
And I think a lot of people maybe are rebelling against that, or kind of taking a stand against that. And like he was just saying, looking for other routes that will, hey, if I'm not going to get the benefits, at least I'll have my own clock and my own and mental health. There's a little bit of a balance there.
Micah, is this part of the collective conscience we're having in this country involving the labor market?
Yeah, I think there is a big shift. I mean, I think what we're seeing is really nothing more than the free market at work, except in this case, maybe it's not, you know, benefiting the types of employment that, you know, we're seeing complaining. I mean, if you want someone to work for you, you need to offer them the compensation and benefits that will make it worth their time. And if you can't find someone to fill that position, then what you're offering for that position isn't, you know, what workers are looking for. And we have seen, you know, businesses raise wages and offer higher wages, and that helps some, but I think they're missing the point that this is not, you know, wages are not the only most important factor, you know, when you select a job anymore. Now, like we heard, you know, health insurance, flexible schedules, all that other stuff is just so much more important than ever was before.
I'm wondering if finding a balance is the real key here between finding a job you want for the benefits, finding a job you want for income, and finding a job that you can keep and you care about. A lot of people have, I had a job for 20 years. That was a family business I was in. It was a food business, and it was just my job. I didn't think about, did I want this job? I didn't think about, will this job be okay for my benefit and my long-term future? I was just scraping to get by, as I'm still doing, I feel, in many ways. And I think a lot of people in the job market are feeling the same way, but now they have this added bonus, thanks, is that the wrong word, to the pandemic, that they could recalibrate their future and their present situation. And I'm wondering if this can, how this will be in the future. What do you see for the near future, at least in the United States, Micah?
Yeah, I don't think this is going away. If anything, I think it will be, continue to be, people have said like an awakening or a reassessment. I think it will continue to happen. And a big part of it is, I think people are reevaluating the value of their time and realizing that, okay, just mindlessly going to multiple jobs, for long hours is not what they want out of life. They want to be able to spend time with their family. They want to be able to have leisure time. And I think that the types of jobs people will look for will more or less kind of reflect that. And that doesn't mean that businesses are just not going to have workers. They just need to figure out ways to get workers to want to work for them, to come back to the labor force. In addition to kind of offering, benefits that are consistent with what people are looking for, even things like lobbying for universal child care programs or more affordable ways to provide good health care to workers are ways that you could convince people to come back to work, if they've chosen not to.
Hey, Micah, this is Dee. I just wanted to throw something into the conversation that I don't think that a lot of people even bring up. So I do agree with you with the work-life balance. I do agree with you with the compensation, the working conditions as well. But I had a job that I loved, a part-time job working in retail. And when we returned from the pandemic, I don't even know how to describe what it was like for people who work in the service industry, especially in retail, and the kind of assaults that we were under constantly from the time we returned. And, at the beginning, we kind of attributed it to, people had been in their homes for a while. They just needed to get out. Everyone was stressed. And I hung in there for another year, but it got to the point where, literally we were being called out of our names, being threatened physically and verbally, assaulted physically and verbally, to the point that I had to, for my own mental health, step away. And I think that that's something that is not brought into the conversation a lot, that people are leaving in hundreds, if not thousands, from the service industry because of the treatment that they receive from the customers that they interact with. Now, let me just say this once again. I loved working in retail, but this past year has been difficult dealing with being assaulted. And so have you ever thought about that as well?
Yeah, you can't see, but I'm like nodding my head vigorously.
Okay. Oh, we see it.
I think
people can't take it.
So much emphasis on just like what the wage is, and if you simply raise the wage, that'll solve all your problems. But you need to take a holistic view of the job, and it's not just how much you're getting paid an hour. It's the work environment. It's the benefits. It's this flexibility with scheduling. It's the type of people that come in. It's how management supports you as a worker or not. And those sorts of things matter a lot more. I mean, you could pay a really high wage, but if there's a toxic work environment, if it's something out of the control of management happening, it's just going to be really hard to convince people to go into those types of jobs and work. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, we've seen a lot of that, customers that are belligerent, even assault workers. And nobody wants to work in that environment, even if you give them a 20% pay raise or whatever it will be.
This is all part of the paradigm shift I was talking about. And for more on this topic, you could check out my column in Monday's Post Tribune. It'll be online as early as probably later today on my Chicago Tribune webpage. It's a Labor Day column on the labor market and everywhere I go, this short staffing we're having and we're hiring kind of thing. So I want to address it. I wanted Micah to address it. Micah, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being on Off Mic today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
We are here. It's Jerry Davich filling in for Mike Puente today. I'm with Martin Alexi in the studio and Dee Dotson. When we return on Off Mic, we're going to hear from Reverend Maurice White Jr., pastor of Beyond Four Walls Christian Center in the Miller section of Gary. He says he went through hell after contracting the COVID-19 virus, and now he feels compelled to spread the gospel about vaccinations for the deadly virus in the Black community and everywhere else. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Jerry Davich with Dee Dotson and Martin Alexi. Earlier this year, the Reverend W. Maurice White Jr. got a glimpse of hell. In February, he and his wife both contracted COVID-19. They struggled to breathe. Their bodies thrashed in pain. They suffered heart palpitations. They feared dying. The couple quarantined themselves in their home with faith, prayers, and a new vow to God. The couple survived the virus, and they didn't forget their vow. Last Sunday, his Gary Church, Beyond Four Walls Christian Center, co-hosted a Get the Shot event in partnership with the Community Advocates of Northern Indiana and Community Health Net. Not only would 500 Pfizer vaccine shots be available, but each person completing their vaccination would receive $100 cash on the spot for one shot and another shot next month. Trouble is, out of the 500 shots, guess how many shots were administered? About 25. I wrote about this, and I was wondering why, so I invited Reverend White to be on the show, talk about it. Reverend White, welcome to Off Mic.
Hey, how are you, Jared? Great to be here, and so honored that you would have me on today.
Oh, no, we appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your passion for what you do, giving back to the community, not only the Gary community, the Northwest Indiana community. And when this event took place last Sunday and you asked me to write about it like a month ago, I said, I'll do it for sure. I'm on board. I wrote a column about it. I posted on social media. I shared your flyer as much as I could. 500 shots. I thought at least 250, 300, maybe 400 would be used. I asked you the day after how many were used. You told me 25. I was just disappointed. I'd like for you, if you can, to kind of explain what happened.
Well, you know what? In terms of what it is that happened, I think is what's happening all across the country. There is so much disinformation, and there are so many views about the vaccinations, and then there are so many concerns that people have about the vaccination, and those things sort of show their head on this past week. But I looked at that as a leap board, or so to speak, or a sounding board experience to let it be known that the type of work that's going to have to be done to get the shots into people's arms is going to have to remain in place. It's going to have to be consistent. And it is something that we're going to have to continue to tap into. Let me just add this real quick, though, for you. On this week alone, is between 3 to 5 more people went in and got the vaccination. It didn't come out on Sunday, but they did make contact and they did have questions that they had, and those questions were answered. And a lot of that was attributed again to yourself and the great article that you did, because it stirred the emotions and made people start to talk about this thing. And Jerry, I believe the conversation like we're having now is as important about this matter as anything.
Reverend White, did you feel you were converted in a way after you got COVID and you realized how serious this was and you wanted to kind of preach about it to your community? Is that what really turned it? Is this needed then? Here's my point. When it comes to the population overall, the U.S. population, people who are not getting vaccinated, and that's fine. I never preach about it and never push about it. I got vaccinated twice early on, and I wanted to do it for myself as well as for my family. Maybe a little bit for the greater good. I'm not sure. I'm pretty selfish. But I'm wondering, in general, with people, when they push back against this, and they don't want to get this vaccination, I think it's going to take cases. It's going to take deaths. It's going to take ventilators. It's going to take these scary words to get them off of that fence. And I don't know what else will do it. Not the preaching. Politics isn't doing it, obviously. Fear's not doing it. It's only going to take if someone close to their family, maybe a loved one, comes down with COVID, has to go to the hospital, they're on a ventilator, or there's a death in the family. Other than that, I don't know what else can get people who are not vaccinated to get vaccinated. How do you feel about that?
I would have to say that we're in the same ballpark of thinking. You asked me about myself. I know what I went through. I know what my wife went through. And as I said, I, not knowing how it was going to end, I asked the Lord to give me a chance. And so I'm taking opportunity at the opportunity to do it. But it does seem like that when people recognize and realize that someone is close to them, does pass away or comes close to it, it does seem to do something. And what a tragedy that it does take that, because what about that person that's asymptomatic? Oh, I got through it, and not realizing that they're still walking around with parts of this virus that are within them, and the Delta variant comes back and is even more severe. And that's what I mean by conversation. I believe that one of the things I asked the group to do, Ms. Tracy Lewis and her group to do, Jerry, was I said, hey, I want to have tables set up where people can ask questions as well. not just because there are people that may want to come and they're still leery because of everything that they're hearing. And quite a number of people did come by and just ask questions and say that they were going to respond in a positive way, you know, just because of that factor.
Reverend Wright, hey, this is Dee. I think that it's great that you just said that you guys added that component to the campaign, asking questions. My church, too, I go to a very large church in the city of Chicago, and we have had a COVID-19 vaccine campaign since probably April. But I think where we missed, because we've had low numbers as well, I think where we missed with our church is that we are just saying, get the vaccine, get the vaccine, get the vaccine.
Exactly.
And knowing that there is hesitancy within the African-American community because, you know, historically, health disparities and all of that, I think that we missed giving information. So, you know, people don't want to hear, get the vaccine, get the vaccine, get the vaccine, especially when they're hesitant. I believe that if we would have started with, this is why you need to get the vaccine, these are the tests that were done, these are the proven results, et cetera, I think that we would have had favorable results. So just like your church where you had 500 vaccines on hand, I think that my church was prepared to vaccinate 5,000 people. And we too had low numbers. We had maybe 50 people show up.
Wow.
Keep in mind, I go to a church of about 18,000 people.
Wow.
So I think that you guys are on the right track by giving the information and allowing people to ask questions, because people do have questions. And then sometimes you have questions, but you don't know what to ask. You don't know how to ask. I mean, you hear the same thing even with people of color going to see doctors. They have questions, but they don't quite know what questions to ask. So I think it's great that you guys offered an opportunity for people to ask questions and hear from professionals.
You know, I'm so grateful for you saying that and Jerry highlighted too about the numbers, because that came to me, and I know that had to be that part of that inspiration. All of it came from the Lord. And let me say it in this regard. I was talking this morning, and I have to give credit where due, because everyone that knows me knows I'm not a political person. But the mayor, Jerome Prince, has gotten behind this, and so has Mayor Snedeker of Holbrook. They've gotten behind this with me. And I asked the mayor, he and I are going to have dialogue next week about ways of finding incentive programs for unvaccinated citywide employees. Informational seminars is what I've asked that Northwest Indiana Advocates would do with me over the next 6 months, that we host one once a month. It doesn't have to just be at my church. Let's go all over Northwest Indiana, and let's have doctors and people that administer the shots there, and let people ask their question. And be prepared if you don't get a positive response or a hostile group. Until we turn the tide with communication and education, I think that's the real grassroots of where this thing needs to go in order for us to get the responses that we need to see and would like to see.
There's another issue I'd like to bring up about this broader issue, and it's the issue of black versus white. This is something that people don't like talking about, but I do, so I'm gonna bring it up. As I told you, Reverend White, when we first met and we talked to each other, is that I've noticed the obvious differences between hesitance for getting this vaccine from maybe the rural white population, maybe southern parts of the states, that kind of thing, and even including Indiana, versus maybe minority populations, and for different reasons, whether there's a hesitancy for the black population and people of color versus political reasons, and the vaccine has been turned into a prop of some kind and a political tool, which could be costing people's lives. I'm not saying it is, but it certainly can be. We're up to, 600,000 or more now who have died from COVID-19.
Yes.
Whether you believe the virus is deadly or not, these people are dying of something. I'm going to say I think they're dying from the virus. And I think it's been used as a political prop. But there's a different comparison when it comes to the black population and of course, in the city of Gary and the black community. And I wanted you to address that. I mean, what are you up against trying to talk people in your community? I mean, Fields, when you told me that you're getting backlash even hosting this event, what do you tell people in your own community of why you're doing this?
Well, as I shared with you before, the thing that's helped me the most is to get through with people is tell my story. And what happened with me and that they're looking at me. And when I look people in the face, I talk to them over the phone and I say to them, I did not know if I was going to make it. And that's not a place you want to be in. That's one area. But the other area of dealing with people is that it's like layers of people that have already piled on. It's like a football player that hits that gets tackled and then everybody goes and piles on top of that player. I have to peel back, or I find myself peeling back so many layers, whether it's family, whether it's people in general, whether it's coworkers. And it's amazing how people will listen to things about some things, but will take the word of another individual that is no different than yourself and treat that as the gospel as it relates to the vaccine. You know, the people will actually come up and they will say, you know, well, my friend said, and this, okay, but what about the medical profession? And then one of the other things that I think that's going to help is with the FDA approval and these things help, because people seem to be a little bit more relaxed knowing that Pfizer. So I'm hoping that the others follow suit right behind that. But the backlash is for real. And that's why I say that the grassroots having talks and having conversations, because just like we talk to people or people listening to us right now, then hopefully they'll go talk with someone. Because the people that did get vaccinated this week after the event, they said after conversation, after seeing some things, that was enough to convince them to come forth.
That is promising. I agree. So, Reverend White, one last point I want to make is, how can people, maybe listeners of the show or social media followers, how can they, if they're interested in more information about the vaccine or getting vaccinated, is Beyond Four Walls available to them as a resource in their community? Because people will have more trust in a church than they will a Walgreens or an organization or the CDC, that's for sure, or any politics at all. Is the church available for this?
Yes, we've made ourselves, let the Northwest Indiana Advocates and anyone else know, former Ms. Tracy Lewis, that we want to be that station. We want to be that house. Our number is 219, if I can give it, 938-0731. We can be called, and we will be there. And what we'll do is that we can answer questions, we'll answer them, and the questions that if we cannot, we can put them into contact. That's exactly what you just shared, Jerry. That's what happened with an individual this week. I was able, because of the relationship, to let him talk with Ms. Lewis and the Northwest Indiana Advocates, and she and the supervisor were able to convince one man. And I live by the theory that one can bring 21. So, you know, these are the kind of things that are there. And Beyond Four Walls Christian Center, we take pride in going beyond these four walls, and we're here.
Yeah, I know you do. And wait, one can bring 21? Is that biblical or is that Reverend White? What is that?
That's the Maurice White 1-1.
Oh, my God.
And I learned that theory from leading people to Christ over the years, that if you can just convince one, I saw one person bring 21 members in the family to the Lord. So one can bring 21. And I've been saying that now for the better part of 20 years.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I'm agnostic and you're bringing me along is what you're doing. I'll be seeing the light soon. I got the vaccination, so if I could just get God in my heart, then we're good to go, right, Maurice?
We're going to work on every area that needs to be worked on.
All right, I'll take it. Thank you very much. Hey, I appreciate your time, Reverend White.
Thank you so much for having me, Dee. Thank you too as well, and please rely on me or call upon me for anything that I can do to help, especially in this area that we're speaking on.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Reverend Maurice White from Beyond Four Walls Christian Center. It's in the Miller section of Gary. It's one of my favorite churches in the region, by the way, too. They do so much outreach. I'm always appreciative of everything they do and the kindness they show to me as well. I listened off mic with Jerry Davich, Martin Alexi, and Dee Dotson. We have a few minutes left in the show, and I was going to do something kind of light to offset some of the heavy issues we've been talking about all day. And when I first learned that Dee in the studio here is a fan of The Real Housewives.
Huge fan.
Huge fan of Real Housewives. I'm thinking, man, my fiance Karen is addicted to this whole franchise. So we're having her call in just for a couple minutes, and her and Dee can chat. Spill tea? What's it called?
It's called Spill the Tea.
The shade. The
right,
tea.
Karen?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Yes. Let's spill the tea. Let's show the receipts. I want to hear it all. Oh. Hi, guys.
Hey, Karen, welcome back. Karen was co-host of Casual Friday, so she's very familiar with Lakeshore. And on Fridays, of course, we did this, and it is casual. So we're going to casual it down for the next couple minutes and just talk about this silly, silly show that so many people are addicted to.
Oh, goodness.
I have to watch because Karen watches it, so it's in the back of my head. I know most of the characters.
Smart man.
And every city. As Dee said, she's a fan of every city. So if you're a fan of this franchise.
Every city? Oh, my God. Dee, tell me, do you think that Erica knew?
I was thinking about that this morning, Karen, as I was getting dressed. Why was I thinking about Erica?
That's the power of housewives.
I don't know if it's because I love Erica so much. I don't think she knew. You know, sometimes...
Really?
No. You always hear stories of couples where one spouse is doing one thing And the other spouse just does not know. That spouse is pretty good at hiding, kind of deflecting, kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine your husband, your fiancé, does he, well, maybe he does discuss with you every story that he's about to write. I don't
Too
know.
Too much.
I cannot imagine being married to such a high-powered attorney. And then pillow talk every night is, guess what I did? I embezzled millions of dollars from these clients. Or can you believe that, you know, I've got the biggest case? Maybe my love for Erica will not make me believe that she did it. Or that she knew, I should say.
And for all of you non-Housewives fans, we're talking about one of the Housewives from, is it Beverly Hills?
Beverly Hills.
Yeah, Beverly Hills. Erica Jane.
Don't look at me. Don't look in my direction for any feedback.
Come on. If you see her, you'd know.
Okay.
You would know.
You should watch her.
And you have a point there, because I think that Tom just wanted his trophy wife, and she wanted this lavish lifestyle. She wanted this quote-unquote singing career.
Yep.
So he funded it. She blindly accepted it. But you know what? She does not look good. She does not look good on Instagram. She does not look good on Twitter. Just going against Sutton and everybody else, it does not look good.
You know, the bigger picture here, I've noticed, with this Real Housewives franchise, we could kind of wrap things up in a way, is that it taps into a lot of universal themes involving family, relationships, dynamics, life. It's not just about these silly, self-obsessed housewives in Atlanta, New York City, Beverly Hills, Orange County. I know it. I know all the franchises.
You know all of them. I'm impressed.
But it's the bigger picture that's tapped into me, because I don't care about these women, but I care about the dynamics. And when I happen to watch, quote unquote, these shows, I'll tap into these dynamics. So, yeah. Dee, you've been a fan for a long time.
I have been a fan since probably, what was the first one?
Orange County.
Yep. Vicky. Vicky is my girl.
God, yeah.
I think my sister has met Vicky on an airplane once.
Really? I think she's from the area, or from the Chicagoland area.
Yes, she is.
See?
Yes, she is.
I know. So, you know, I was thinking about all of the different franchises. Oh, by the way, I'm not sure if you heard earlier this week, Karen, that the husband of one of the Real Housewives of Atlanta, her husband passed away.
Even Martin knew that.
Yeah, even I knew that.
How did you know that? You got to watch Beverly Hills.
It's my feed.
Which wife?
Nene Leakes. She lost her husband, who was a favorite.
She's outspoken. Nene's outspoken.
Yeah.
She's feisty.
Yeah. Nene is my spirit animal, by the way. I'm calm, meek, and mild in here, but I am really Nene, by the way.
Oh, really? Nene?
Yeah.
So was Martin, probably.
Yeah, Martin's probably Nene, too. Yeah. But I have been obsessed since forever. I think I'm obsessed because in real life, I cannot imagine having toxic relationships with other women. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like a car crash where you're like,
heck yeah, it is. And we're gapers, aren't we? We're all gapers to this car.
I'm holding up the traffic. I cannot imagine having toxic relationships, but I find it pretty entertaining to watch other women kind of go at each other.
You do not, it teaches me how not to be, how not to act. You know what I
mean? That's true.
There's a time and a place. Don't bring up the children. You know, that kind of stuff.
That's true.
And we had a conversation with an author who wrote about The Real Housewives. Karen, what's his name?
Brian Moylan.
And he wrote this book. Oh. Yeah, I did a column on him, and I kind of came out of the closet to him. And I said, I am a Housewives fan of sorts, and he just loved that. I mean, you know, he went, oh, my God, I'm the typical target audience. It'd be like us converting Martin. You know, like Reverend. It might happen.
It might happen. When you come in from exercising, Martin, you can check out The Real Housewives of anything.
There you go. You could really exhaust yourself.
Right.
We're talking some Real Housewives at the end of the off-mic show. We're coming up at the end of the show, and I appreciate Karen. I appreciate you calling in, talking some Housewives with Dee.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for calling. I love it.
Karen, we'll have to chat off-air, okay?
And by the way, what should our listeners have? What kind of Friday should they have today, Karen?
Well, they could have a casual Friday.
Yes. Have a casual Friday for sure. So we're coming up at the end of off mic, though. You can listen to this show again if you want as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'd also like to thank my guests, Maurice White, of course, Micah Pollack from IUN, Martin Alexis in the studio with us, and producer Dee Dotson, who's been so hospitable. You know, this is so wonderful, outstanding for us. I'm Jerry Davich, if you haven't caught on yet for the past hour, and we are glad you tuned in. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. And of course, like Karen said, we hope you have a very casual Friday. Take care, folks.